In Beirut, rescue workers are still searching in the rubble for survivors from Tuesday's enormous explosion. The blast was so strong, it was felt more than 100 miles away. Our Middle East correspondent, Dion Nissenbaum, was at his home less than half a mile from the site.
I just dove to the ground and used my body to shield my daughter, who's 4, and the blast just pulsed right through the apartment building. It shattered the glass and wood. We were hit by glass and wood, and it ricocheted through the building.
We'll hear Dion's harrowing story and the impact this will have on Beirut going forward. It's Wednesday, August 5th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Economists expect that last week's expiration of the $600 a week supplemental unemployment benefits will set the U.S. recovery back, even if it's only temporary. Our Kate Davidson has more details.
What we will start to see probably very soon is a pretty swift drop in consumer spending. Some researchers from the University of Chicago and JP Morgan Chase found that for every dollar in benefits that's going out, jobless workers are spending about 73 cents immediately. So what that tells us is that when those benefits go away, there will probably be a pretty immediate decline in consumer spending. So that could mean that people start to miss rent payments, they start to miss utility payments or miss credit card payments.
Extending the supplemental benefits has been a sticking point for lawmakers negotiating the latest stimulus package on Capitol Hill. Democrats are pushing for a $600 extension until January. Republicans want to reduce it to $200 a week. But even if they pass an extension, it could still take several weeks for Americans to get the money.
Benefits are administered by each state individually. So there's a big variation, from state to state and how quickly they might be able to adapt to the change. It also depends on how complicated the change is. If they decide, okay, let's just continue the payments at $600, that's, fairly straightforward, but it would still require at least a week or maybe two for state unemployment insurance systems to go into their, into their systems, into their computers, and actually turn those benefits back on again. So it could be, a few more weeks before they start seeing that money again, even if there's some agreement reached and it passes and it gets to the president's desk this week, which I think is pretty optimistic.
Former Vice President Joe Biden will no longer travel to the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee to accept the party's presidential nomination due to concerns about the coronavirus. Instead, he'll address the nation from his home state of Delaware. A person familiar with the plan says the convention later this month will now be entirely virtual, something unprecedented in American political history. New York City is setting up checkpoints at bridges and tunnels leading into the city to enforce a quarantine order for people traveling from states with high rates of coronavirus cases. A state order requires travelers coming from those states to self-isolate for up to 2 weeks. And we report exclusively that Democratic lawmakers are seeking records from Kodak and the federal government about a potential $765 million federal loan to produce drug ingredients. In a letter to Kodak, lawmakers expressed concerns about the photo company's, quote, lack of pharmaceutical experience. Securities regulators are also investigating the deal and the surge in Kodak's stock that came after news of the deal was made public. Coming up after the break, yesterday's explosion in Beirut injured thousands and destroyed neighborhoods miles away, including the home of our Middle East correspondent, Dion Nissenbaum. His story and what's next for the city after the break. A day after a deadly explosion that rocked Beirut, Lebanese authorities are investigating why more than 2,700 tons of ammonium nitrate, a highly explosive material commonly used in fertilizer, was being stored at a warehouse in a busy port area for more than 6 years. They believe a fire at the warehouse triggered the blast, which left a huge crater at the site, leveled surrounding buildings in the commercial district, and destroyed neighborhoods. Our Middle East correspondent, Dion Nissenbaum, lives with his wife and daughter less than half a mile away from the blast site and witnessed the explosion firsthand. Dion, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Dion, it's hard to imagine what you've been through in the past 24 hours, and we're so glad to hear that you're now safely in a hotel. Can you take us through what you've experienced in the past day?
Sure, yeah. I was home yesterday evening with my daughter around 6 p.m., and I was actually taking her to the bathroom and heard a loud blast. It was unusual because there haven't been a lot of car bombs in Beirut in a very long time, and so it sounded like a car bomb or some sort of explosion, and there's been a lot of tension in Beirut with the economy crumbling and coronavirus pandemic spreading, and so I went out into the living room to call my colleagues to just try and find out what was going on, and when I was standing in the living room, my daughter came out naked from the bathroom, and she said, "Dada, what was that?" And at that moment, the second, much more powerful blast engulfed our third-story apartment in East Beirut in Mar Mikhail neighborhood, about, you know, no more than half a mile from the blast site. And I just dove to the ground and used my body to shield my daughter, who's four. And the blast just pulsed right through the apartment building. It shattered the glass and wood. We were hit by glass and wood, and it ricocheted through the building. It sent our parts of our sofa out into the street. You know, all the car alarms went off. My wife, who's a pediatric doctor who works here with an aid group, was in a car about a block and a half away coming home from working out, and she was tending to people in the street. There were, you know, just complete chaos, people running in the street. The street was filled with destroyed cars and pieces of the building that had fallen onto the road. It was shattered glass everywhere. It was just complete chaos.
I can't imagine that. Dion, how is your family doing?
You know, to be honest, we're still all in a state of shock. We've been pumping on adrenaline for 24 hours now. I haven't actually slept yet. You know, we had to rush to get her into an ambulance. We had to, you know, we got her to a hospital that was damaged by the blast. It was complete chaos inside. We were able to get her a bed. They were turning people away. You know, I've worked in Gaza, covering conflict in Gaza and Kabul, and you know, suicide bombings, and even in Istanbul. And I've never experienced anything like what we experienced yesterday. The blast was so powerful. We were, you know, right in the midst of it. We took the full brunt of it. There's shattered glass all over the floors. My daughter's blood is on the floors and the walls, and all of the windows have been blown out. The doors have been blasted in half. It's destruction like out of, you know, really only seen in the worst war zones, and trying to explain it to our daughters is a challenge. You know, she calls it the hurricane, and she, you know, she doesn't want to go through that again, and we don't want her to go through it again. So we're trying to ask ourselves, you know, whether we can keep on here, whether, you know, we need to take her to a safer place. We moved here because we thought Beirut was a safe place and the risks were manageable. This is not something that we'd really thought about. And so we're, as a family, just trying to figure out what's best for our daughter.
Dion, you mentioned the thoughts you're now having about safety. Lebanese officials have said this was not an attack, but there are still a lot of questions about what happened. What can you tell us about what you've been able to learn over the past day?
You know, I've really been focused on my daughter, and so I haven't really been able to learn a lot. The the prevailing view here is that it was some sort of horrible accident that was mismanaged by, you know, years of government officials that allowed this warehouse full of dangerous fertilizer to stay. I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't had a chance to look. I think if it is true, what it does is reinforce the perception among millions of Lebanese citizens that their government is failing them. You know, there was a peaceful revolution here last fall that brought down the prime minister and the coalition government and brought in a technocratic government that was supposed to put things on the right track. And that was followed by the coronavirus pandemic and a prolonged economic shutdown here that shuttered a lot of businesses. And then it moved right into a broader economic crisis with Venezuela-style hyperinflation and, you know, selling money on the black market, the currency crashing, and power blackouts. For weeks, we've had to use generators up to 20, 22 hours a day to keep our power on. And this is, you know, maybe the worst possible crisis for a government that already has very little confidence. And if the prevailing view is true that this was, you know, an industrial accident that was brought upon by negligence of the government, it's hard to see that this government can continue on. I think the anger here will rise and frustrations will rise. You know, our neighborhood is completely devastated. It's destroyed. And talking with our Lebanese friends, you know, who lived through the civil war here, is they don't know. They've never experienced anything like this, even during the civil war. And, you know, how the country recovers from that is the big question.
Given the economic backdrop here, we know this explosion occurred in a key commercial area of Lebanon. What are you hearing about the impact that's likely to have?
Yeah, it hit the port here, which is, you know, one of the vital lifelines here. Lebanon imports almost all of its goods. And, you know, one of the problems before the blast was that there has been hyperinflation. So the prices have been going up as the currency is collapsing, and it's all on imports that are brought in to the port. And I don't know, again, I haven't really had a chance to figure out what's been happening at the port, but a colleague of mine told me that the blast site is underwater. It's just a crater now. I don't know what kind of damage it's done to the rest of the port area, but it has to be significant because we were a half mile away and our apartment was devastated and our neighborhood was devastated. And if you were at the epicenter of that mushroom cloud, the devastation must be unimaginable. So the country is just reeling right now from crisis after crisis.
You mentioned, of course, that Lebanon is also dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, and you, of course, went to a local hospital. What can you tell us about how the healthcare system is managing during this time?
The healthcare system was strained before the blast. The country is running out of beds for coronavirus patients. There's not that many. I think at the main hospital, there's like 36 dedicated ICU beds for coronavirus patients, and those are almost full. The number of ICU patients has been going up dramatically in the past few weeks. The country is headed for another economic lockdown starting tonight, actually. There's a curfew that started here. And so the hospitals have been completely strained. They've had a nurse who recently died of coronavirus at the main hospital. Many doctors and nurses had to go into self-isolation because they were in contact with people that had coronavirus. And now you had this this blast that sent hundreds and hundreds of people to the hospital. Certainly, we weren't able to wear masks when we were there. You know, many people didn't have masks, and they had to turn people away. The hospitals were overflowing. I know a couple of journalists had to drive 20 minutes up into the mountains outside of Lebanon to get treatment at clinics because they couldn't get treatment in any of the hospitals in Beirut. So the immediate crisis has passed. The mass casualty incident has passed. But, we're headed right into a new coronavirus lockdown to try and keep the coronavirus from resurging here. And it's just fraying at the edges.
Dion Nissenbaum is our Middle East correspondent. He joins me from Beirut. Dion, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
For our continuing coverage of the explosion in Beirut, visit our website, wsj.com. That's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.